one of the reasons I know the Apostle Paul wrote Hebrews is because it is so obtusely written. How the guy couldn't get to the point ever. He could not ever get to the point. If this man had applied for a job at a newspaper, any newspaper, in this day and age, he would have been told to deliver the newspapers. He never could have been a writer. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender. You have to wonder why God did it that way. Why God called people who could not write, who could not be concise and succinct. Well, it's because he wants to make it work. He wants us to be unashamed workmen. We covered that topic in the book of 2 Timothy. So Paul here writing in chapter 2. Now I want to go to verse 5. We're talking about angels again. Before we get out of chapter 2, not to angels does he subject the impending inhabited earth concerning which we are speaking. Now, everybody thinks angels are great. But not only are we going to judge angels, but we're going to rule over angels. In the meantime, during this time of humiliation, and if you hadn't noticed, we're now in a time of humiliation. We're now in a time of being hidden. We're now in a time when who you are is not showing up on the radar, on anybody's radar. Your friends don't know who you are. Your coworkers don't know who you are. Your family doesn't even know who you are. And you're less than the angels, but so is he. Listen to this. Verse 6, Hebrews 2. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Or a son of mankind that thou art visiting him? Thou makest him some bit inferior to messengers. Inferior to messengers. This is a concordant version of angels. The translation there, messengers, because that's what it means literally. Angels are messenger boys. I told you that. With glory and honor thou wreathest him. I hate this King James language. I really do. And dost place him. Why did the concordant version feel they had to do this? I don't know. Over the works of thy hands, all dost thou subject underneath his feet. This is why it's no fun to read the Bible. For in the subjection of all to him. Now listen to this verse 8. This is why, again, I have evidence here that Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. Listen to this language. I want to take you back to 1 Corinthians 15. Now, please, no, stop that. I'm not saying that Paul here is giving us the same truth in as he is in 1 Corinthians 15, but it's very suggestive of it. Listen to this. For in the subjection of all to him, he leaves nothing unsubject to him. Yet now we are not seeing all subject to him. Yet we're observing Jesus. Not all has been subject to humanity. Because remember, we're supposed to subject the earth. Adam was supposed to subject the earth. And for a while there he was. The animals were subject to him. But after sin, he became subject to them. In that, he ran away from the lions. And the pterodactyls, when they swooped down, and the Tyrannosaurus Rex. They were all contemporaries of Adam. After sin, he stayed away from them because now things were in subject to Adam. And in fact, Adam had no longer access to the tree of life. We know that messengers or angels guarded the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. Adam was supposed to be in charge of that, but now angels are put in charge of it. But in the resurrection, in the kingdom, man, humanity, is going to be given jurisdiction again over the earth. It's going to be restored. And it's restored first in the new man, which is Jesus Christ. Now we're observing Jesus, who has been made some bit inferior to messengers because of the suffering of death, wreathed with glory and honor, so that in the grace of God he should be tasting death for the sake of everyone. Again, very obtuse, very difficultly written here. I don't know how anybody made heads or tails of this without really intense study, but it could be that those Hebrews were more intelligent, more educated than we are, and there's got to be something lost in the translation here. So that he should be tasting death for the sake of everyone. For it became him, because of whom all is, and through whom all is, in leading many sons into glory, to perfect the inaugurator of their salvation through sufferings. All right, I'm going to go back a little bit. Verse 8. The subjection of all to him, he leaves nothing unsubject to him. Yet now we are not as yet seeing all subject to him, yet we're observing Jesus. Now that's a big point. Yet we're observing Jesus. All right, nothing is subject to us now. We can hardly get our pets to do what we want them to do. And it's hard to get your kids to do what you want them to do. Except for me. It was easy for me because I loved them and I disciplined them. But anyway, it's generally difficult. Now this is a very humiliating thing because we know that everything eventually eventually is going to be subject to us. And in this context, it's the earth that's going to be subjected to Israel. Yet they don't see it, do they? They're humiliated. Yet they see Jesus. Now, this is what I like to call a transadministrational truth. I love to use that word whenever I get the chance. Transadministrational. That means it's a truth that applies to both administrations, to the circumcision and the uncircumcision. Namely, yet we are observing Jesus, who was inaugurator of the faith. We're going to see that down in verse 10. Leading many sons into glory to perfect the inaugurator of their salvation through sufferings. The inaugurator. He was the first one, and he was perfected through sufferings. Now he's sealed. He's there. He is in heaven. The Son of God is there, and that is the surety. That is the guarantee that the rest are going to come. Israel's going to come, and they're going to subject the earth, which will be a restoration of the way things were in the Garden of Eden, a partial restoration. The full restoration, I believe, will come in Eon 5, the new heavens and the new earth. And we are also looking to him, the inaugurator of our faith as well. Transadministrational truth here in the fact that God perfected him. He's going to bring many sons to glory. He's there. He's the guarantee that we're going to get there. He's the guarantee that it can be done. It's like the first people that went to the moon were a little bit nervous because nobody had ever done it before. And once somebody did it, it was easier for Apollo 12 to go up there and do it because Apollo 11 did it. Likewise, once Roger Bannister ran a 4-minute mile, it seemed like people thought in that day it was an impossible barrier to break, to run a sub-4-minute mile. Well, Roger Bannister did it, and I can't remember the year, sorry about that, 1940-something or 50. And after that, a lot of people did it because the mental barrier was broken. A lot of this stuff's mental. Well, what we're looking about here isn't necessarily mental, but how are you going to take a human being, translate that human being into heaven? Well, God did it with Jesus Christ. He overcame death with Jesus Christ. And he demonstrated to us through the resurrection of many, many people that he has the power over death. So we look to him. Don't look to yourself. Look to the one who has already made it. He's our guarantee. Now, I told you I was going back to 1 Corinthians 15, because I think Paul is alluding to that here. In the subjection of all to him, he leaves nothing unsubject. Yet now we are not as yet seeing all subject. This is pretty cool, actually, when you get right down to it. Right now, nothing is unsubject to him. Yet we are not as yet seeing. Keyword there is seeing. Not seeing. This is a huge theme in Hebrews, and it's a big theme for us too. They're not seeing it. They're decimated. Remember, I told you the kingdom was pulled out from under them, whew, like that tablecloth trick the magicians do. They pull it out, and they're left standing with no kingdom. They're not seeing yet. Yet they're observing Jesus. And so the first two chapters, this is how important it is. The first two chapters here are engaging the Hebrews with Jesus, who is the inaugurator and perfecter of faith. And he went beyond the veil. He rose from the dead. He made it. One of our own is there. How can I say one of our own? Because he was a human being. I know he came from God. I didn't say he didn't come from God, but he's still a human being. No, he's the perfect go-between. He's not exclusively a human being. He's not exclusively the deity. He's the perfect go-between. He's the go-between. He's the intermediary between God and mankind. And yet he's fully man. He's called the second human, the second man. And this one made it. He's on the other side of the veil. That means we're going to make it too. For it became him, because of whom all is, and through whom all is, in leading many sons to glory, to perfect the inaugurator of their salvation through suffering. Now, 1 Corinthians 15. Tell me if this sounds like what I just read. Verse 27. For he subjects all under his feet. Now, whenever he may be saying that all is subject, it is evident that it is outside of him who subjects all to him. He subjects all under his feet, yet we don't yet see it. And everything is subject except the one, obviously God, who subjects everything to him, i.e. Jesus Christ. Now, whenever all may be subject to him, then the Son himself also shall be subject to him. This is a much higher truth. And it could be that in Hebrews, we're only talking about the subjection of the earth to Israel. So if you want to look at it as a subdivision of the ultimate grand truth that Christ is going to subject the universe to himself, that's the ultimate grand truth. Now come down one level and Christ is going to subject the earth under his feet through the nation of Israel. And yet they don't see it, and we don't see it either. Not only do we not see Israel subjecting anything, in fact, in the end times here soon, she is going to be surrounded by the nations who are going to crush her, because right now she's the smallest nation on the planet. She's the most persecuted nation on the planet. And really, if you get right down to it, kind of getting into revelation truth here, those aren't real Israelites in the Holy Land. The true Israelites are scattered abroad to the four corners of the earth. Amos 9:9, God said he was going to sift them, scatter them abroad. That's where they are. And yet the true Israelites, those of faith, will see Jesus Christ and realize that that is their destiny. And now I'm transferring this to you. If you want to know what your destiny is, look to Jesus Christ. If you want to know what your future is, look to Jesus Christ. If you want to know what you're going to be doing in the resurrection, look to Jesus Christ. Your identity is wrapped up in him. You were wrapped up in the baptism of his death. You were wrapped up in his crucifixion. That's the bad part. You are considered to have died with him, Romans chapter 6. In fact, the whole world died with Christ, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. That's all the bad news. The good news is that because of our association with his death, we shall also be associated with him in his life. And I'll close with Ephesians chapter 3, verse 1. If then you were roused together with Christ, and you were in type, this is a figure of speech called prolepsis, God calling what is not as though it were, roused together with Christ, be seeking that which is above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Why should I do that? Because my identity, my future is wrapped up in him, so I'm seeking him. I'm seeking above. I'm lifting my eyes to where he is. Paul exhorted the Hebrews to do the same thing. Look to your inaugurator and perfecter. It's sure a heck of a lot better than looking at all the junk that's going on down here.